Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
You are a human animal. You are a very special breed. Or you are the only animal who can think, who can reason, who can read.
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and welcome to Bookworm. Today, it's my great honor to have as my guest Orhan Pamuk. He is the Nobel Prize-winning author, most recently, of The Museum of Innocence, published by Knopf. His earlier novels include Snow, My Name is Red, The New Life, The Black Book, and The White Castle. These are only those that have been translated into English. There is as well a memoir of childhood and of Istanbul, called Istanbul, and a book of essays called Other Colors. Now, I want to begin by highly recommending The Museum of Innocence because it is a novel of genuine and thoroughly bereft passion. And it seems to me to be one of the most delicious books that I've read in a very long time. If I compare it to Tolstoy's Anna Karenina, that's just my opinion. But I ask you to take me seriously. Whereas the subject of scandal in Anna Karenina is, of course, adultery, here in the Museum of Innocence, the subject is virginity. And it is necessary to know that as late as 1975, when the novel begins, the subject of virginity is still very crucial to a Turkish marriage. Can you explain?
Yes, it's a social thing. It's a historical thing. It's an idea. Also, unfortunately, related to a person's standing in society. In fact, in a chapter called Some Unpleasant Anthropological Truths, in order to convey the meaning of the book, perhaps tongue-in-cheek, believing that this taboo will fade away in years, so in future generations may not understand the logic of the book, I explained it in an almost encyclopedic manner. After I finished the book, I had an assistant who was just a graduate of university who worked with me, and I said, well, what's the situation now? And he said, everyone is posing that it's not important, but it is unfortunately, still important issue. But it's not only me. Say, in Garcia Marquez, the Chronicle of a Death Foretold, it's again the issue. This subject is a good way of representing the repression of a vast culture. In a way, it's a metaphor about the how repressive the society is. But of course, we have also some of Islam, the culture where men and women, before or after marriage, do not meet, do not enjoy sex easily. In fact, I would call my book a love story in a repressed society where, of course, human heart, I strongly believe, is same everywhere. People communicate with gestures, with looks, with silence, test each other, their endurance. That is what love is all about, instead of enjoying lovemaking.
Now, in its own way, the other comparison that came to my mind was in Marquez's Love in the Age of Cholera. Mm-hmm. The sense that a true romantic sensibility is being evoked at the same time as we understand a terrible pain in this book, because its hero thinks he is simply above the now comical mores of his society. But in fact, it seems that he does not know when he is hurting another person, and is so devastated by love that he doesn't understand that he can't marry one woman and have another, the one he truly loves, on the side. Mm-hmm. He keeps talking about paradise and happiness and the bliss that he anticipates ahead of him, owing to what he thinks will be his situation, which was the situation with his father, who had a woman, a younger, much younger woman, on the side, and he's expecting to graduate into his father's bliss. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't understand that in 1975, if something has changed, perhaps a woman feels more respect for herself than to want to be hidden in an apartment and given secret treasures.
This is a love novel, but it does not put love on a pedestal. It doesn't say, like Romeo and Juliet, oh, how enduring lovers, how much they love, how much they suffer. My character, yes, as in Garcia Marquez, Love in the Times of Cholera, has an enduring, endures the pains of love for a long time, but he is not a great guy. He always thinks that he's going to get the girl very cheaply, in a while, in a week, in a month, in 6 months. Meanwhile, he is also trapped because of his naivete on that, or because the heroine, Füsun, is, as you have pointed out, stronger, fights back, she is developing, Turkey is changing, woman is now wearing miniskirts and going out the streets and fighting for their independence.
And, you see, he is gifted with a certain kind of neglect. In telling his story, he barely sees fit to mention, among other things, that the streets of Istanbul are war-torn between nationalist and communist forces, that there is the woman he is engaged to, Sybil, a woman of respectability and propriety.
Good family.
Good family. And you see, what's odd and beautiful about the book is that he simultaneously manages to establish for us that he's part of a shallow society of rich kids, kids from well-to-do families.
All posing as more westernized, enjoying, thinking that enjoyment of things that come from West, consumer objects, and posing as more westernized as they really are not, is the enjoyment, a sort of an enjoyment of life. I think, on the other hand, that this is more or less the private life of not only upper classes of Turkey, this is the private life of upper classes of most non-Western societies who had an ambition to be westernized, to look like, to rule the lower classes with a pretext of being more refined and westernized.
Mm-hmm. Now, this pretext of refinement and westernization is, in fact, a denial of the traditions and even the things that would give rise to a country's literature, its self-identity. And so, in his eagerness to have what he thinks he wants, there is also an eagerness to jettison the past, to be a part of a place, he tells us, that no longer exists, even as he speaks. The book covers some 30 years, and the things he speaks of are disappearing as he speaks. It's what leads him to want to create a museum of his love, and he collects, among other things, 1,400 cigarette butts smoked by his beloved, because in conventional ways, at a certain point, with a horrifying lie, he's lost her. He loses her, in a sense, over and over and over again, because he doesn't know, it seems, what truth is, because truth depends upon which culture you're talking about, the westernized one or the Turkish one.
But at the beginning of the book, he is, and that was my problem as I was writing the book and telling my friends that he is a very cheap, high society womanizer. But at the end, he suffers so much, I had hope that the reader will pay respect to his voice. There is a constant shift in his point of view. He sometimes talks from years and years after the sad story had come to a conclusion. Sometimes we are in the present where he is behaving cheaply in a humorous way. I like the way he gets old, wizens up, sees the whole panorama of this romantic affair or cruelty of love. This I really paid a lot of attention in this book, how it feels when you're in love instead of putting love on a pedestal. For me, it was the most challenging part of the book was to go and write interestingly about love pain, how it spreads from the stomach, how it hits the head, how it makes you so, well, in a popular language, depressed and sad, and how even the visual enjoyment of being alive, seeing things is lost, everything seems superficial, as Gerald de Nerval wrote, that once he's not close to his beloved, everything looks like vulgar distraction. While after most of the suffering is gone, our character is wised up and tells his story as almost a panorama of Turkish upper-class life, middle-class life. The whole culture is embraced by this look of the character who is remembering his love.
I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to Bookworm from the studios of KCRW. I'm talking with Orhan Pamuk, author most recently of The Museum of Innocence, published by Knopf. We'll continue after this short break. I'm Michael Silverblatt, this is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Orhan Pamuk about the Museum of Innocence. Now, while it seems to me, at least in the design of the book, that it is quite clear that the hero of the book is not Orhan Pamuk, nevertheless, he describes a state that you describe as a writer. The hero, Kamal, is addicted to the woman he has met, a distant but not in fact related woman, who is a shop girl in Bogoha's class. But when he cannot see her, and in fact, especially when she refuses to see him, disappears, hides, can't be found, he feels half dead and begins what will be his collection of memories of her. Now, you've spoken of this half-dead quality as being your feeling when you are not writing, that Fosun is, for Kamal, what literature is for you.
I agree. That's a very wise point. But there is another idea that will combine this. What makes Kemal, my character, attentive to his beloved Fosun is, of course, love. And he, as he visits the family dinner table, watching TV and chatting idly every night for almost 8 years, he also pays attention to her gestures, what she wears, how she eats, her reactions to the sitcom or what's on TV, what they watch on TV. And in his observations, he behaves like a good writer. He pays attention to small detail. I identify most with Kemal the way he pays attention to little details of the beloved. I think being a writer for me is being in love with the world. You pay attention to it and you write about its curiosities.
Yes, in fact, it seems to me that the details and the things that Kamal begins to collect are in fact the way one builds a novel. So the novel is the Museum of Innocence because it's made out of the otherwise forgettable moments of passion that only a novelist or someone besotted with love would maintain this accurately. And here we have a whole set of exhibits within the novel. Surely we would like someday to go to a museum where the tablecloth where Kitty and Levin have written their secret messages in Anna Karenina is kept. But since that museum doesn't exist, this is the museum of the details of novel writing and love simultaneously.
Also, that my ex-wife, who is a good friend of mine, once told me, after she had read the book, "You wrote what we know most about," she said. This is also what I have seen in upper-class Istanbul life, in middle-class Istanbul life, details, rituals of a society that is slowly and slowly changing, objects, lottery tickets, New Year's entertainments, listening to radio, from radio to the television, little things that all middle-class, lower-middle-class, upper-middle-class families have there in their houses, how they serve the food, what comes first, how they cook, the little petty conversations in that. This is a book based on first-hand observation of a whole city, Istanbul. But I don't want to underline the Istanbul sign. I want to underline that this is what I have seen in life. This is what I have seen mothers and aunties and cousins and big crowds and big families. That's how they chant. That's how they talk, sometimes emptily, sometimes the most dramatical thing just like that comes and passes like a slap in the face. I went to summer garden cinemas. I went to Bosphorus and ate the way they had ice cream, the way they had ice cream. The book is full of heartfelt details that I had, like a museum keeper, wanted to preserve.
Now, I happen to notice, you know, every time I talk to a writer again, I look at the earlier books, and I notice to my surprise that the epigraph of the first novel to be translated into English, The White Castle, which is an epigraph from a mistranslation of Proust, might be the epigraph of this novel as well.
Oh, I never thought of that.
To imagine that a person who intrigues us has access to a way of life unknown and all the more attractive for its mystery. To believe that we will begin to live only through the love of that person. What else is this but the birth of great passion? Now, amazingly, what Fosun has access to is another way of life, a quiet life of sitting home with her parents at night, watching television, helping her mother sew. She's an extremely paradoxical character because she, too, would love to escape and become
a movie star.
As it turns out in this novel, unlike most dreams of this sort, most people think this is not unlikely. But something, the men around her, her veneration for her parents, is protecting her. And yes, she provides Kamal a way of traveling to this mysterious other life. So the generation of the life of passion, whether it's reached by discovering a book or a woman, it seems to be the theme that guides all of these novels.
Yeah, maybe I don't want to learn more about myself from, you know, you're right. That Fosun has that mystery, and it's very brilliant of you to notice that, that epigraph that I put in my White Castle, that of we begin to sense that Kemal falls not only for Fosun's, say, beauty or attraction, but a sort of a cozy, traditional way of life. In that sense, this book is an East-West novel in reverse. Now, westernized upper-class guy has second thoughts about his pretensions. But, on the other hand, he doesn't end up being a communitarian, old-fashioned, conservative guy. He ends up falling out of his class but cannot join another community. I, in fact, identify most with my character, Kemal, more or less. Of course, my family was not as rich as his, but more or less I lived in the same neighborhoods, the same clubs or restaurants, and saw them from inside. I was also giving that same kind of bourgeois life, the same kind of future, but I identify with him because we both fell out of it. He, because he was deeply in love. Me, because I wanted to be a writer.
Exactly. And it seems to me that what this book is deeply about is that he's taught to fall in love with life. He won't
enjoy life. He is ready to enjoy life, and he is not so idiot. He is also, compared to his contemporaries, slightly smart, knows, has some culture. So everything looks, his future looks brilliant at the beginning, and that's where he is the most shallow.
And you see, it seems to me that whereas he falls in love with ordinary life, a novelist, when young, too, falls in love with bizarre life, the possibility of writing a truly exotic Arabian Nights of a novel. But that as a novelist grows, somehow or other, one has to teach oneself to be in love with the details, the actualities, the accuracies, the specificities of ordinary life.
In this book, although again I play around with the story, shift the narrative point of view, but this is my, quote, most classical, most 19th century novel. When I begin writing novels, when I was 25, these people we see in the novel, in Hilton Hotel, engagement ceremony that I lovingly describe, my uncles, my relations, my family, they would all say, what? You're going to write a novel? Who's going to read your novel? You don't know anything about life. You are 25. At that time, I used to think, well, they don't know anything about literature. Literature is not essentially about life, but other books about seeing life differently, about techniques, about Proust, Borges, about Beckett. It's about modernism. And in fact, that's how I wrote Black Book. That's how I wrote White Castle. But now, as I reach, now I'm 57, I think, well, now I think that generation of people who said that you don't know anything about life, maybe they were not right. Now I wrote this book with the feeling that I know something about life. That's in this book, I will write what I know about life. The secret wisdom will come surface as you read the book. It will not be, say, as I did in Black Book, my postmodern jokes or things, which I'm also proud of. But this is my less experimental, more classical 19th century period novel of mores and habits of Istanbul society, upper classes, lower classes.
I've been speaking with Orhan Pamuk, author most recently of The Museum of Innocence, published by Knopf. Thank you, Orhan, for joining me.
Thank you, Michael. It was such a joy to talk to you.
Tune in next week when Orhan Pamuk joins me for a second conversation, next time on Bookworm. You can comment on today's show or read an excerpt from The Museum of Innocence at kcrw.com/bookworm. You can podcast this program, share it with a friend, or embed it on your blog with the click of a button on our new media player at kcrw.com. My co-producer is Melinda Siegel. Alan Howard is associate producer. The technical director is Mario Diaz. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
To the jungles you can go in books.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcast the most recent ones from our website. Go to kcrw.com/bookworm. Plus, copies are available. For ordering information, call 310-450-5183.
Books tell you everything. They're your treasured friends in prose and rhyme. Now it's Book of the Mouse.